This is Oh Snapped, Season 1, Episode 9, and this one is kind of, familiar?
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
Yeah, because we actually covered this case on our other podcast in our Patreon, and it was the cadet murders, so we covered this murder. So it's interesting, obviously Snapped, they come from the perspective about the perpetrator, the female perpetrator.
Mm-hmm.
Not a whole lot of information about the victim. So I think in this case, at the end of the episode, we can add a little bit more about her because we know it. And mm-hmm. I feel like it's nice to do.
Totally. I think that we snapped it. Like you said, it's an interesting situation because they are so focused on the perpetrators. And it's interesting. But at the end of the day, the way that we roll is we like to honor the victims because they are the victims. We don't like to glorify or romanticize or idolize any criminals.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they did a little bit more of that as the show went on. But again, I mean, I know we've said it till we're blue in the face. These are short episodes.
And times were different back in 2004.
They sure were. They sure were. Hey, y'all, before we jump into the show, I just wanted to tell you about a podcast that we recently came across that we think is a perfect fit. This case that we're covering in the Snapped episode today has to do with the military, and there is a podcast called Military Murders, and it's amazing. We think you'll love it, so take a moment and listen to their promo.
You may have been watching the news and keeping an eye on the Vanessa Guillen case out of Fort Hood, Texas. Well, Military Murder is a podcast about cases just like this. Murders that occur around the world at the hands of soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines, and sometimes even veterans. In addition to extensive coverage of the Vanessa Guillen case, Military Murder recently featured an unsolved murder case out of North Carolina. Get this. During Memorial Day weekend this year, 8 soldiers went camping, but only 7 returned home. The 8th soldier's partial remains washed ashore 6 days later, and his death was ruled a homicide. The case involves a sketchy 911 call with conflicting information by the friends, and a $25,000 reward offered by Army investigators looking for the public's help. New episodes of Military Murder are available every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts, and with a backlog of 40 episodes, there is plenty of content for you to binge. Now go on, subscribe and listen to Military Murder.
Let's jump into it, shall we?
We shall.
Diane Zamora was a Texas teen who had lofty goals.
She sure did. She grew up in an affluent, like they called it a bedroom city, but it was kind of up and coming, becoming an affluent city.
Yeah.
And she lived there with her mother and her father, and her father had been caught cheating several times with other women in the city.
Yeah. And she just really wanted to succeed. There were a lot of things that affected, I guess, how ambitious she was, but she was very much like, maybe an overachiever, you could say. She was like a straight A student. She studied hard. She always just viewed herself as like, I'm going to go somewhere. I'm going to hit my goals.
Mm-hmm.
Very goal oriented.
Oh, yeah. She was like, if you want to be somebody and you want to go somewhere, you better wake up and pay attention.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And she did. To a point. So she went to Crowley High School in Fort Worth, Texas. And we actually talked to David Graham,
if you're not familiar with the case, we'll get into a little bit more about his involvement, I guess.
Yeah. And he was her boyfriend at the time. Fiance, I guess.
Well, yeah. Towards the end of it, yeah.
Yeah. So he said she was the kind of girl that made straight A's but never really talked to anyone. So she was like kind of kept her head down.
All business.
Nose in the books.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know who would have been happy to have her as a daughter? King Triton.
That's true.
You know?
Talked about King Triton a lot lately, I feel like.
Well, he's relevant.
Yeah, because then I don't remember which. It must have been on the other
show. It was the last Snapped we did.
Really?
Where? Because I didn't know. In Miami and the coral. Oh,
Mansion. Yeah. I was like, where did we talk about it? Because I called it a pitchfork, and you were like, it's a Triton.
It's literally a Triton.
And you were like, remember, that's why King Triton. Yeah.
No, but also remember on Anchorman, whenever they get in that huge fight, and they were like, at one point, what was his name? Steve Carell's character. What was his name?
I don't remember his name.
His name was Brick Tamblyn or something like that.
Yeah.
And they're like, Brick, at one point, I saw Brick had a Triton. Did you get a Triton? And he's like, oh.
Yeah, I definitely didn't know that's what it was called. Never put that together.
Definitely called a Triton.
Today, years old.
It's like when we found out about Sister Act 2.
And we're like, back in the habit.
Back in the habit.
Yeah.
Because the habit is what nuns wear.
Yeah, but I saw that like, everybody was today years old for that, I feel like. Oh, well, a lot of people.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know about that.
Yeah. Okay.
Everybody that I've told, they're like, oh, duh.
Oh, I was like, I just thought it was like, oh, Whoopi, back in the habit of being a nun. That was one of her old habits.
Now she's back at it.
Exactly. Anyway. Wow. Okay. So she wanted to go into the military because others around her were failing. And she wanted to succeed. So in 1991, she joined the Civil Air Patrol, which was like an introductory military training club, would you say?
Sure.
And it was like, it wasn't just at her school. It was maybe like, citywide, countywide, yeah. Something like that. Because there is where she met David Graham. And he went to a different high school. So that's how they had their chance meeting, I would say.
Mm-hmm. But in 1995, a mutual friend invited them both over to the friend's house. And that weekend, David said that they became close and then they became inseparable. And one of the prosecutors was like,
their relationship just took off and became very intense very quickly.
You couldn't get them apart with a crowbar.
You can't get them apart with a crowbar.
I thought that was funny. I was like, okay, they were close. Got it.
Yes.
A lot of friends thought that David was controlling and overbearing, and I don't know who it was. It was like a family friend or somebody said that even when...
Yeah, it was Lorena Jordan, the family friend.
Okay. She said that there was a time that, like, I don't know, they were over at her house or something talking, and David said, like, it was like Diane was in the middle of a sentence, they're speaking, and David's like, okay, time to go, and she, like, cuts her sentence short and is like, okay, gotta go, and leaves.
She was like, she barely even said bye.
Yeah, just like, okay, time to go, that's my cue. So there were a lot of people that thought, I guess on her side, a lot of people thought he was overbearing.
Oh, yeah.
We can give you a little more insight into that. Later.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of summer, they went back to school, but since they went to different high schools, they could not spend all their time together anymore. So, and you know how it is. It's like, that's the summer before their senior year. They're what, 16, 17?
Yeah.
Probably. You want to spend every waking moment with that person. And they both had some jealousy issues, I think, or at least mm-hmm. Diane did. Mm-hmm. So she was feeling really secure about the relationship while they were together all the time. She also has this history of her dad being unfaithful.
Mm-hmm.
So when David goes back to his school, she's worried now.
Yeah, I think that she's the kind of person that is insecure because of outside situations or... Who knows? I mean, you can be insecure for all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
She was insecure, so she probably felt like, well, as long as I have my eyes on him, we're good.
Yeah, exactly. Or, like, I don't want it to be an out of sight, out of mind kind of thing. Like, because he ran track, and there were, you know, girls on the track team, and I think she was a little bit worried, like, you know, he's at track, he's going to be spending time with other girls. And I'm not there to, like, keep his attention, so I don't want his eye to wander or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the girls that was on the track team was Adrian Jones. And Adrian was described as athletic to the extreme. She ran track. She played volleyball. She played basketball. She didn't meet a stranger. And she was very, very popular and very attractive.
Mm-hmm. She was a very pretty girl. David said he didn't meet her until she joined the cross-country team her sophomore year. And they didn't really get to know each other even after that. So...
Which definitely made Diane happy, I'm sure.
Right, yeah. It's like he didn't seem to have any interest in her. In 1995, Diane and David announced that they were going to get married after they graduated from their respective military academies. So they both were planning to go on.
Diane wanted to go to Annapolis, mm-hmm. and David wanted to go to the Air Force Academy.
Yeah. And so the academies wouldn't let them marry while they were enrolled, so they were going to marry 5 years to the day, August 13th, 2000, after they talked about it. It was going to be as soon as they graduate, basically, they're going to be able to get married.
Mm-hmm.
The narrator says,
5 years was a long wait. But for Diane and David, the wait would turn out to be even longer. Because instead of serving their country, the young lovers would end up serving time.
I love these things that they do, or that she does, excuse me.
Yeah.
It's perfect. So on December 4th, 1995, this was a school day, nothing crazy, no big deal. Diane and David were in class at their own respective high schools. Diane was at Crowley, David was at Mansfield, but Adrian, at Mansfield as well, was not there.
Yeah. And a local farmer made a gruesome discovery that morning. He saw across the road from his mailbox a girl's body that seemed to have been shot twice. It ended up being Adrian, and she was dead. Adrian's mom had called police that morning when she discovered she was missing. She told them that before bed, Adrian had taken a call from a David from track.
And Adrian's, or the family friend, Lorena, said that Adrian's mom was like, okay, you don't need to be staying up late, but I'll let you take this one call.
Yeah, she had a phone curfew, but maybe it was close enough to time or whatever, and her mom's like, okay, take this one and then go to bed, whatever. Police asked David, and he was like, oh yeah, well, I did talk to Adrian, but that's it. I didn't see her or anything like that, so I don't know what happened. And I guess they took him at his word.
Apparently.
And it seemed like nobody knew anything. They weren't getting any leads. The only thing they had really was that phone call, and by, like, all accounts, David and Adrian didn't really know each other well. It was like, yeah, we both run track, but we don't hang out. We don't really talk. Like, it doesn't seem like they would have been together for any reason.
Right, and just, like, talking on the phone with each other.
Yeah. So, Adrian's murder goes unsolved. Life goes back to normal. David and Diane graduate high school. David goes to the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. Diane goes to Annapolis, which is impressive in and of itself. I mean, you know, they're both doing very well in the military.
Well, and in the episode, you see them holding up like newspaper articles because they both have been recognized by the community and by the city as being people who, like, these young adults that are going to these very prestigious academies.
Right. Yeah. It's like, it's a big deal. And, you know, they're dating. So it's like kind of a big thing. That's like, oh, boyfriend and girlfriend both get into prestigious military academies.
They seem like a power couple.
Yep. End of August 1996, late one night at Annapolis, Diane is having girl talk, painting some toenails.
Mm-hmm.
And she tells one of her roommates that she and David would always be together because she said, my boyfriend killed someone for me.
Can you imagine being the roommate and being like, I'm going to have to stop you right there.
Yeah.
What?
This is not, are you trying to impress me? Like, I really hope you're just making this up. Like,
squeeze me?
Oh my goodness. So this person, the roommate, reported this to her superiors, which is absolutely the right thing to do. And they talked about how, you know, the military has their code of honor and you're supposed to report stuff like that. I mean, we know a lot of times that doesn't happen. So it's,
thank God.
Yeah. Very
good.
Then she reported it. I can't think of any words.
It was good.
Her superiors called police in Texas, and police flew to Annapolis to question Diane. And of course, she denied everything. So they wanted to check, you know, did a crime like this occur where she came from? Because they're like, you know, obviously the boyfriend hasn't been here. They're thinking, I mean, because they could have talk to police there and it not go anywhere, mm-hmm. you know? So I'm glad they called.
Did their due diligence.
Yeah, thought about calling over there. So then they go to the Air Force Academy and talk to David. And David is like, yeah, I did everything. Like, no.
He did not resist it at all.
At all. And Diane's like, nope, absolutely not. So, I mean, obviously, they didn't talk about it or he just caved, but he confessed. Once Diane was told that David had confessed, Diane ended up confessing as well. And they both wrote, like, they made written statements and they made verbal statements, but their statements matched to a T.
Mm-hmm.
They were almost like verbatim copies of each other.
Exactly. So apparently the cause for the murder started after a track meet in Lubbock, Texas on November 4th, 1995. David said that he had driven Adrian home from a track meet and they parked. And while they were parked, they had a sexual encounter. David then tells Diane, and Diane said, or in his words, Diane took it terribly.
She freaked out.
Freaked out. She ran inside. She began beating her head against the wall and she started like weeping and sobbing.
Yeah. And Diane was like, takes the next logical step and says, because he's apologizing, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. And she's like, you know what? She is to die. There's no, the only way that I can forgive you of this and that we can start over or move forward is that she has to die.
What?
That doesn't, who goes there? Like, that it doesn't make any sense.
No.
And Dr. Helen Smith knows.
A lot of times when people murder, what they want is they just think that all their problems will be solved if this person that caused them problems no longer existed in the world. In her mind, she felt like the only way to deal with his betrayal was to make sure that the girl that he was with no longer existed, that the betrayal was just wiped out.
I mean, when she explains it, it makes sense in the sense that you cannot make sense of it, but you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. Okay, I guess in her mind that's why, but that's still obviously not logical.
Mm-hmm.
David called Adrian and convinced her to sneak out and then drove her to a field. Then she realized that Diane was in the back seat because Diane like crawls out from the back seat and
she
Adrian
popped out at the right moment.
Yeah. And then obviously Adrian is like, oh my gosh, this is
an ambush.
Yeah. So she gets really scared. And Diane said that she picked up a barbell from the back seat and hit Adrian in the back of the head with it. And then David picked up the weight and smashed her head a second time. She managed, though, to crawl out of the car window and she tried to escape. And what happened was she was running and she hit a barbed wire fence. This poor girl. She, so Diane is like, you have to go get her and make sure that she's dead. We can't leave her alive now. So David gets out, walks up to her and shoots her a couple of times. And he made sure that she was dead. They were both arrested following their confessions.
David told them that there was a gun, and he says it was a 9mm Makarov hidden in his parents' attic. And he said that he liked that gun because it was the kind that the KGB used.
What a concerning thing for a 17-year-old kid at the time of the murder.
Yeah.
That's very strange.
Yeah.
That's concerning.
Mm-hmm.
Ballistics were done to prove it was the same gun used in Adrian's murder. After being arrested, Diane and David were held in the same jail, and they would like write letters to each other, and they would try to yell messages to each other. It's like, just write the letter.
It's such like it. Everything about it, because this is a very, very adult crime that was taking place.
Yeah.
But everything about it screams ridiculous immature teen.
Yeah, it's like, hey, David, hey, can you hear me? I love you. I love you. Are you thinking about me? Did you dream last night? Like, what are you going to yell at each other?
Right? Oh, maybe it's like they just yell to each other like, hey, David, HH. It means holding hands.
Oh,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, chat room talk.
Yeah.
But from different cells.
Oh, that's cute then. Never mind. I take it back. It's cute. So they were definitely still together. They were trying to, like, Tammy Wynette, stand by your man.
Sure.
After about 7 months in jail, though, they broke up.
Well.
Because, I mean, what are you going to do here? You know? But they figured out that if one of them was going to have any chance of getting away with anything, they were going to have to throw the other one right underneath the bus.
Oh, yeah. Turn on each other so quick.
Yeah.
Sing like a canary.
Absolutely. And, you know, David said he realized after he started thinking about things, like, this isn't how love is supposed to be. Now that I think about it, it's not healthy for my girlfriend to convince me to kill somebody. So now I'm just starting to wonder if that's, like, really the best relationship for me.
Mm. What?
There's a lot of stuff, like, you can be in a relationship in high school, of course, where somebody is controlling, where somebody is verbally, mentally, all kinds of physically abusive, all these things. And it can take a while to figure out, okay, that's not where I'm supposed to be. Like, because it's very formative, you know, and it's like, you don't always know. Like, you just think this is normal, mm-hmm. you know? But I just feel like even if there is an indiscretion, that you would pick up on it fairly quickly when your girlfriend says, okay, well, you're just going to have to kill her then. And you're like, well, I mean, I don't have anything else to compare it to, so I guess this is what happens. Like, of course,
all the time.
Yeah, of course you should know that's not normal.
In his defense, I guess, he probably never read anything like this in his Chicken Soup for the Teenage Soul.
That's true. They really don't talk about love triangles and murder.
No. Party of Five, Dawson's Creek, they're not tackling these kinds of issues.
How are the children supposed to learn?
No idea.
Wow, this is a problem. February 2nd, 1998, Diane's trial begins, and the prosecutors painted her as a domineering and controlling monster. And she, you know, like we said, flipped on David, like, they'd never met. She
totally played the victim.
Mm-hmm. She did. She said that he was violent. He was a domineering boyfriend who collected guns and played with them in inappropriate ways. She said he stuck the gun in her mouth and other areas. That's disgusting.
Right. And definitely painted him as sadistic.
Yeah. Those things are not okay.
Mm-mm.
The defense said it was David who called Adrian the night she was murdered.
There's no question about that.
Mm-mm, that's totally true. He's the one that shot her using his gun and bludgeoned her with the butt of the gun, not the weight. So the defense attorney was like, well, her injuries were more consistent with the butt of a gun rather than a weight. And when we covered it before, I don't think that's accurate. I think it was very much accepted that she was hit with that weight.
Mm-hmm.
Because they brought the weight on purpose. That was Diane's initial...
her weapon.
Yeah, that's what she wanted to do. She wanted to bludgeon her.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that's accurate. She claimed that the reason she confessed to striking Adrian with the weight was because she was scared of David, that he had intimidated her and threatened her. So she said... yes, that she struck the first blow as well.
I'm scared of what he's going to do if I don't take...
yeah.
If I don't say that I participated in this.
Yeah, but they... I mean, their confessions were exactly the same. They both said she hit her first with the weight.
Mm-hmm.
Separately. It didn't seem like they had time to talk to each other because it seemed like... and I'm sure it's hard to, like, talk. I mean, they're at military academies. You can't be on your cell phone all day, and you can't at 1995 anyway. So, but it seemed like between when they talked to her and I'm sure different police went to talk to David, it was like they just both gave the stories and they matched.
Right.
The only problem, though, was that she confessed to her roommate as well. And the roommate had testified and said that Diane said that Adrian deserved it because she was unfaithful, or that, like, Adrian was promiscuous. Yeah, basically. Mm-hmm. And they really painted Adrian in a not very positive light. just like, oh yeah, Adrian is this, you know, 16-year-old that is so promiscuous and is having all of these sexual encounters, like almost trying to be like, well, I mean, that's what you get when you mess with somebody's boyfriend.
This is an expletive-free show, and you make me want to cuss.
I know.
I'm mad as cuss.
I know. I'm having a hard time right now. It's ridiculous. And also, like, David went to a different school. Who's to say he didn't tell everybody he didn't have a girlfriend?
Like, yeah. What did he have to... Adrian is a victim all the way around.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah.
Even if, let's just say, let's go that route and say that she knew that David had a girlfriend. That is not, it's not a death sentence, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't deserve to die.
Right.
They're in high school. People make mistakes. People mm-hmm. make mistakes all their lives.
Yeah.
This is just ridiculous. I cannot stand victim shaming and I cannot stand slut shaming.
Mm-mm.
It's not going to work. That dog ain't going to hunt.
No, absolutely not.
So this is one of my favorite parts of the episode.
Oh my gosh.
It was so good. Prosecution had another key piece of evidence. They had Diane's date book. In it, she circled the night of the track meet and wrote Lubbock next to it. And then she also circled the night of the murder and wrote 1:38 a.m. Adrian.
Are you serious? She's like, oh, well, I'm gonna mark it in my book. What? Who writes that stuff down?
No idea.
Like, hey, I want to commemorate the day that my boyfriend cheated on me, so I'm going to mark that in my book so I always remember the day that that happened, as if you're going to forget. And then, you know what? I better mark down the date that I murdered this girl because, I don't know, what if later I can't remember the day or there's a discrepancy or I can't remember what if it interferes with another appointment I have?
True. I mean, she might be very busy on the night of the murder, and she doesn't want to double book herself.
Well, absolutely, because, you know, 1:38 a.m. at 17, you're usually very busy.
Yes. I do think, though, possibly, so writing down circling the date of the infidelity, that probably had a lot to do with her obsessive personality, where she mm-hmm. couldn't let it go, so she had to remind herself, because she probably wanted to look back on it and just fueled that anger yeah. that she had.
Yeah.
And then the Adrian thing, obviously, she just wanted to... I feel like it was smugness, you know, like, okay, see what I did?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You messed with my boyfriend on this date, and like a month later, mm-hmm. you got what you deserved mm-hmm. in her mind. On February 17th, 1998, Diane was found guilty of capital murder. She was sentenced to life in prison. And her trial was first, so once she got convicted, there was no surprise when David was found guilty as well mm-hmm. in July of that year. He was also sentenced to life in prison. And his trial was the last time they ever saw each other. And apparently she didn't even testify. Like, they brought her in to testify, and then she just, like, sat on the stand and looked him in the eye. And it was, like, a long thing.
Close upon her eyes, close upon his eyes, close upon hers.
It's exactly what it was. And then she was like, and left. So really weird.
Very weird.
And Diane is now married. She's married an inmate in another prison. They wed by proxy after a pen pal relationship. And she and David have had no contact since his trial. And I don't know. They didn't say anything about David being married, so I assume he's not. But you guys... Okay, so since we covered this case already, we know some other tidbits. First of all, Adrian was a really, really amazing girl. She was a great student. She was a great friend. She was a hard worker. She was so loved. Like, her brother gave a statement after the sentencing, and it was so moving. There's such a sweet family. And she was very responsible. Very responsible. That's why they knew, like, when she wasn't there that next morning, that it's not like, oh, well, she probably went to school early, whatever. She would have been in that house. Anytime she was late, she would have called her mom. Like, there's absolutely no way that she would have just up and left. And she had a boyfriend that was not David.
Mm-hmm.
And what ended up coming out, and he may have not said this till after this ran, because, you know, it was several years later that he admitted to this, He said he made it up. He and Adrian never even slept together or whatever it is that he says happened. It did not happen.
Wow.
So when
all of this.
Yes, all of this because he wanted to mess with her. So he said that because during the trial, Diane said that he was abusive and he's like, no, I never hit her or anything. I guess I played like mind games with her and stuff like that, but I wasn't abusive. So I don't know if he just wanted to make her jealous or what he was trying to do, but he told Diane that he slept with this girl he went to school with, I guess thinking she would never
be like, well, who was it and where does she live and all this stuff.
Yeah, like she didn't know her, so it wouldn't matter. Like she wouldn't be able to verify that information, which she didn't verify the information, but she believed David, and Adrian lost her life over it. And it was just him trying to mess with her because, I mean, he definitely seems emotionally or mentally abusive.
I think immature.
Yes, immature. Because then when she's like, okay, well, she has to die, he would not say, okay, look, I made it up. He wasn't going to face that. So he went through with this murder of a girl that did nothing. He never even gave her a ride home that night. They talked to her track teammates, and she did not ride home with him that night. None of this happened.
It's just so ridiculous. It's so sad. Yeah.
And even if they had, you know, like we said, even if they had done something, messed around, whatever, she didn't deserve to die for it, but they painted her.
The
defense people painted her as this kind of slutty teenage girl who just, you know, messed around with guys who had girlfriends or whatever. And even if she did do stuff like that, doesn't matter, but she didn't. And they're just like smearing her reputation. Mm-hmm. It's horrible.
That is terrible. Terrible.
Yeah.
I hope that Diane and David cannot sleep at night.
I hope so too. Because they're awful. And David's gone back and forth with a bunch of stuff. Like,
David's not a credible person to talk to about this.
No, he's not. He's definitely not. I mean, he's obviously a major liar, but he just, her poor family has had to go through so much.
It's awful. Well, all of their families.
Yeah. And he likes to give interviews.
Yes, he does.
He likes to talk. He's always the one who talks. Diane didn't give an interview until like 2017 or something crazy. And she just came out and was like, I'm innocent and I'm still trying to appeal my conviction.
Good luck, girlfriend.
Yeah, you're still lying to yourself. So that's episode 9, man.
Yuck, man. Yuck.
Yeah.
King Triton would not approve.
Absolutely not. This is not okay.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, we will catch you next week for episode 10.
Yay!
Bye!
Bye!
Also, because you are probably screaming at home, this is the second episode that we have called the pitchforky thing that King Triton carries, a triton, and we have been made aware that it is, in fact, called a trident. So, we apologize for the misinformation, and, you know, you just don't learn that stuff in school, and if we did, we forgot it. So, anyway, we know now what it is, and we hope we didn't bother you too bad with that.